Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. This is a program that's designed to help legal nurse consultants with their businesses, with their legal nurse consulting skills, if they work in in-house positions or their independents. And I have with me today Melissa Coma, who is a legal nurse analyst for the defense firm Marshall Dennehy, Warner, Coleman, and Goggin. Marshall Dennehy, which is its shortened name, has offices in various parts of the country, and Melissa is working in their Pittsburgh office. She works in the medical malpractice department and has been there for about 2.5 years. She's a registered nurse and has been in nursing for 27 years. Throughout her career, she's worked in community hospitals as well as university hospitals and worked in critical care units, telemetry units, and also on the abdominal transplant floor at the University of Maryland in Baltimore, Maryland, which is where we intersect a little bit, Melissa, because I worked on a case involving a woman who had her intestines transplanted at the University of Maryland in Baltimore. So I've got that case in my memory as we're talking. And then after being in Baltimore, Melissa came back to Pittsburgh and worked as a post-op kidney transplant coordinator for several years before becoming a transplant case manager for a large insurance company before transitioning to her current position. She absolutely loves being a legal nurse consultant, where she gets to use her experience as a nurse and yet still learn something new every day. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you, Pat. It's nice to be here.
Tell me, you went from an insurance position into legal nurse consulting. What was the bridge that took you into this new world?
I had always been interested in legal nurse consulting, even back to the time when I was a floor nurse in Baltimore. Just something that I had always thought about doing. I love mysteries. I love puzzles. I've always watched crime shows and legal shows on TV, and so it just kind of all was always in the back of my mind that this would be an area of nursing that someday I might like to do. After I moved back to Pittsburgh and was working as a transplant coordinator, unfortunately we had a couple of instances where things did not go well and cases, you know, were definitely going to be going to trial. And that just kind of brought it all back for me. So I decided when I was working as a coordinator that this is what I wanted to do. So I took the courses and I did it. The insurance company position was a transition period for me, as I was waiting to, you know, find an in-house position for legal nurse consulting. I knew that I didn't want to own my own business. So it was just a transition period until I could get here. But I learned so much at the insurance company that I've been able to apply that knowledge here as well.
Mm-hmm. And what aspects of working for the insurance company were you able to carry over into your defense position?
The clinical knowledge. When I was at the insurance company, I was a transplant case manager, but it encompassed all of the transplants, including bone marrow and stuff like that. I had never worked with bone marrow patients, so there was a lot of learning that went on as far as how people are diagnosed with the various cancers that require bone marrow transplant, their initial presentations, everything like that, in addition to like billing aspects, because you'll find we have a lot of medical bills that we have to go through, and you know, knowing how the insurance companies bill and what they bundle and everything like that is actually helpful in determining damages and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You were working in the insurance company, and you were learning and growing and absorbing knowledge, and then something caused you to think in terms of looking for a job in a law firm. Tell us about how that transition took place.
About a year and a half into the insurance world, I started realizing, okay, I'm learning a lot, but it's still not really what I want to do. So I signed up for the job board notifications, Indeed Beyond, you know, those ones that are out there, and I would get notifications of positions that they deemed related to legal nurse consulting. I would also check the newspapers. The Pittsburgh market for in-house legal nurse consultants is tight.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get here, we stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a matter of being patient, being very diligent, checking, and I saw this position come open on one of the job boards. Didn't exactly meet the criteria that they had posted as wanting as far as experience as a legal nurse consultant, but I didn't let that stop me. I said, the worst that can happen is they won't call me for an interview. So I sent my resume in, and it was actually called for an interview, and a couple days later received a phone call back offering me the position.
What was the discrepancy between what they were advertising for and your background?
They wanted, ideally, someone, in addition to a strong clinical background, they were looking for someone that had 3 to 5 years experience as a legal nurse consultant.
Mm-hmm. Did you find out after you started the job why you received that offer as opposed to somebody who might have had the experience, or anything more about that hiring decision that you could identify as to why you got the job?
I did not. I asked them, when I interviewed, I told them I was very upfront. I have not done this before. I've taken home study courses, but I have not done this. I think it was the fact that they were looking for someone with a broad clinical background. I had worked in community hospitals. I understand how they work. I also understand how things work in teaching facilities. So I think it was never officially told to me, but I think that it was actually the clinical background that helped them to make the decision that I was the one that they wanted to hire.
Mm-hmm. And are there other legal nurse consultants at the law firm besides you?
We have a nurse in Cleveland in their office there, and that is it.
Then you came into the job. How did you learn what to do? What was your orientation like, and what do you do now?
I really did not have an orientation, so to speak, because the firm is so large. Computer training is done in Philadelphia, so they did send me to Philadelphia to learn the computer system and everything like that. I worked with a couple of paralegals who kind of showed me the way that they do things. The paralegals primarily organize most of the records, and then the records will come to me for analysis. Depending on the attorney, it can be just a narrative summary of care. I have one attorney who likes timelines, so most of his cases that I work on, he requests that a timeline be completed for the entire case. I have fact check complaints, and just to ensure that what is in the complaint can be backed up by the medical records or not.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of locating potential expert witnesses. I will review plaintiff's expert reports do a lot of medical research for some of the more complicated cases. I've worked on trial preparation as far as displays that will be used for the jury to see. And I've even reviewed some deposition transcripts looking for whatever medical conditions that may have come up, you know, in the deposition that may not have been referenced in the medical records. Kind of a, you know, as I've been here longer, my list of variety of things that I do has expanded.
How do you juggle the caseload if you've got more than one attorney asking you to work on a case?
What I do is I started keeping just a Word document, a chart that has all of the assignments that I get, who they're for, what case it is, what needs done. Most of the time, if it's an urgent issue, they will let me know they need this by a certain date. I also have access to their calendars, and I will look to see if there's any, look ahead to see if there's any deposition scheduled, anything that may be going on that would say to me, okay, this needs to be done by such and such a date. That goes onto my spreadsheet that I use to keep track of my assignments, and I work that way. Trial preparation is always a priority, and if I know about depositions, then the deposition work is the next priority. After that, everything else just kind of falls into wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I have cases, there's 20-some volumes of medical records. Obviously, that gets worked on a little bit at a time, depending on everything else that's going on. You're still, just like you're setting priorities for your patients in the hospital, you are still setting priorities for your caseload
mm-hmm.
in-house.
Mm-hmm. So you walked into this very interesting and sometimes very complex medical malpractice world. Tell us about the most interesting case that you've worked on.
One of the most interesting for me, it actually did not go to trial. It actually settled, but it involved the failure to diagnose multiple myeloma. Our client had performed a laminectomy and spinal effusion on a patient, and the patient did not do well. He kept declining, having more pain, more paresthesias, everything like that. He was ultimately diagnosed with multiple myeloma, but when you went back through all of his medical records, it turns out that a couple of years prior to that, he had had abnormal lab work that had been ordered by his primary care doctor. Primary care doctor had reviewed it, recommended that a serum protein electrophoresis be ordered, gave the patient the prescription for it. The patient never had it done. The PCP reminded the patient a couple months later, hey, you still haven't had this done. Still didn't have it done. The gentleman went on with a progressive back pain, and that's how he ended up at our client. Pre-op labs still contained the elevations and the markers. Still wasn't diagnosed, and the gentleman underwent surgery, and it took several months after surgery for him to even be diagnosed with multiple myeloma.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, from, you know, to me, it was just like this, you know, you feel bad that it was missed, but then you look and it's like, well, he didn't follow through with having tests done that his primary care doctor ordered. It was a whole big mess,
mm-hmm.
so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and it ended up settling. Our client actually ended up paying less than the primary care doctor. The primary care doctor had not been named in the lawsuit until I finished my review of the records.
Mm-hmm.
And when I informed my attorney that, you know, this is what had been going on prior to all of this, they joined the primary care doctor, and like I said, he ended up paying more than our client.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the most interesting that's resolved. I have many that are very interesting, but are not resolved.
Yes, and we all know it can take several years for it to wind its way through the system.
Absolutely.
When you're looking at cases, of course, you're looking at them from the perspective of, is this case defensible? Is this case indefensible? What are the factors that you look at that would make a case defensible?
I think one of the most important things is the amount of damages that the plaintiff has suffered. If you have somebody who really doesn't have any damages, it's kind of like, okay, we can probably defend this because you really don't have any, you had a bad experience, but you have not sustained any permanent damage from it. I also look at, of course, the documentation, especially in fall cases.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the electronic medical records now, it's very easy to forget to click something. Or, you have other cases where absolutely everything is clicked and it looks perfect, but they still fell.
Mm-hmm.
Which we all know patients fall. Sometimes it is unavoidable. So I look at those aspects of it. I approach every case with a completely open mind. I do read the complaint so that I know what the aspects of the case are. And then I go strictly by what is in the medical records. They are what's going to be used, and I try, this is what's here. This is what is documented. Sometimes it has to go on forward to the interviews with the medical staff to help fill in the gaps. But I look straight at the records to use to formulate my opinion as to whether or not the case is defensible or indefensible.
And really, that's the only information that you have in front of you. You can't interview the plaintiff at that point. You can't read witness statements. You've got to focus on what's in the chart.
Exactly. And you'll find, that I've found some complaints where the complaint will leave out a few items that are in the medical records that actually do kind of cast a different light on whether or not the case is defensible. So, you always have to be aware of what the complaint says versus what is actually in the medical record.
Then there's those troubling situations, Melissa, when there has been an incident, but the medical record makes no mention of it. The other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a dilemma as well.
Absolutely. And then I will, point out to my attorney, okay, there is no documentation that XYZ occurred. And when they interview the medical professionals, the nurses, they kind of hone in on that and say, can you explain to me why this wasn't documented? And it could be that they were in the throes of caring for the patient, forgot to document it. But that's something that doesn't come out until later on down the road.
Mm-hmm. I know that you're working closely with the defendants, some of whom are physicians and nurses and hospitals. Do you ever get feedback that a defendant has made changes in a system or a practice as a result of a lawsuit?
I know that the hospitals will, continue to try and re-educate nurses as far as documentation goes. I've had, some of the nurses, they've read their documentation and they're like, I didn't documented something in a different manner. And I mean, they haven't expressly said that they plan on changing, but you can tell that they're thinking in the back of their mind, okay, I should have done this differently. I'll do this differently from this point forward. And it's very difficult with the electronic medical records because when they're printed out, it doesn't look anything like what you see on the screen when you're entering it. So I think it's a shock, honestly, for some nurses to see what the printed records look like.
Mm-hmm. I know that people have strong feelings about electronic medical records, both providers who are using them as well as the legal professionals who need to rely on them. One of the surest ways to get a heated discussion going is to ask a person's opinion on electronic medical records, because I've never talked to a person who is neutral about them. There's always a reaction. Do you have an opinion on how they affect your ability to do your job?
They do, and it's mostly because of the manner in which they're printed. We have several facilities in the Pittsburgh area who use one system, and when the records are printed out, the assessments are broken down under different headings. And so each assessment that's entered for that particular heading, whether it be neuro, cardiovascular, respiratory, whatever, it's all printed out under one group. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to piece together what happened to the patient, you have to go through so many pages and literally reconstruct a head-to-toe assessment that the bedside nurse is entering all at once. But when it's printed out in split-up sections, and it can be very time-consuming and very tedious to make sure that you get everything that the nurse documented and as she was entering her assessment, so that you can see what's going on. Because otherwise you're seeing a whole group of neuro, a whole group of respiratory, and it's over the whole span of the admission, and you might be looking for one particular day. So that, to me, that makes reviewing the records a lot more time consuming, and it's the manner in which they're printed.
I'm very familiar with the system that you're talking about. And sometimes not only is it printed as one set of notes related to a system, but sometimes the notes are printed out of chronological order so that you might get Monday and Tuesday and then Thursday and Friday and then Wednesday and then Saturday and then Sunday and Friday, and you've got to put those pieces together in the right order in order to see a chronological set of notes.
Versus the good old days when you wrote out your head-to-toe assessment and it was all there.
It was all there. Maybe not legible because you couldn't read the handwriting, but it was all there.
Right.
You know, I know that people who work a lot of cases for the plaintiff attorneys see what happens to the plaintiff and the plaintiff's family as a result of medical malpractice. It comes out in interviews, it comes out in testimony, it comes out in depositions. But I think it's less well known what happens to a physician or a nurse or another healthcare provider who is named as a defendant. And I believe that you see that perspective if you're interacting with defendants in the office. Could you tell us a little bit about that side of litigation?
Sure. It runs the gamut from those who feel guilty, so to speak, that something bad has happened, and they start to question, was their care appropriate? It starts there, and it just runs along that line until you reach, like, we have a couple who are they've just thrown themselves into their defense, and they're out there on their own doing research and copying articles and trying to do everything that they can for their own defense,
mm-hmm.
which is good. It's helpful, and they should be defending themselves, but it just depends on the individual. Nurses, when they're first notified, they're scared because, okay, the first thing that they think is they're going to lose their license.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is they don't remember the patient. As nurses on the floors, they have so many patients, and you can't remember them. It's unless something happened that was so horrific that you're never going to forget that patient. These daily patients, maybe one who falls, you know, something happens. Unfortunately, they're not going to remember them. And the only thing they have to go on is their documentation. And it goes back to if for some reason they didn't document, then they have to explain what their normal practice is. And then there's always their fear of, well, what if they don't believe me? What if the jury thinks I'm just saying this is what my normal practice is because I didn't document it? And you see the fear
mm-hmm.
in them. And mm-hmm. it can really play on them because, you know, they don't want to lose their license. They're a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they do. And the same goes for the physicians. I tend to empathize a little bit more with the nurses because that's what I am. And, you know, I feel so bad. I'll see them in the restroom and you can tell they're just terrified to be here and, you know, be talking to an attorney. And yeah, my heart just goes out to them. Like, just listen to what the attorneys have to say. Our attorneys are very good at, you know, preparation with the nurses for their depositions and everything like that. They're excellent with them. So
mm-hmm.
just listen to what they say. You'll be fine.
Well, and the odds are also in their favor, too. If the case is not settled and it goes into court, then there's about a 70% chance that the defense is going to win. According to the numbers, I just testified 2 days ago in a trial and was talking to the attorney and getting prepared for my testimony, and he talked about the challenges as a plaintiff attorney in winning the cases because the odds are in the favor of the defense overwhelmingly in most cases. Mm-hmm. But there's still this big question of what's going to happen. There were two claims adjusters sitting in the courtroom when I testified this week watching the trial, and the judge was giving them eye contact, kind of sending them a signal, are you ready to settle? And they shook their heads no. They wanted to let more of the trial play out, but it's a risk for them, and it's a risk for the plaintiff attorney. There's all kinds of risk associated with putting a case on trial.
You never know what the jury is going to do. There's no way you can predict that. Our attorneys here, I can honestly tell you that of the cases that have gone to trial since I've been here for our medical mal department have all been defense verdicts.
Good.
So that's, you know, that is, you know, a definite testimony that, you know, to our attorneys, and, you know, always hats off to them for what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a difficult area of practice. I know, as you've described what you were doing, working with attorneys in the law firm, that there are people listening who say, I would love to have a job like Melissa has. What would you advise a legal nurse consultant to do in order to get a job in a law firm?
I think first of all, you have to know the market that you're in. I happen to live close enough to a city where there are a lot of law firms who use nurses. So you have to know your market, and then you just have to be diligent in looking, checking for job postings. You can even some firms, you can go on their websites and see if they have any open positions. You just have to be diligent. If you, truly want a job, you can even, send your resume to a law firm. I know that, that a lot of the firms will keep resumes that they receive, and when they have an opening, go through them.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to keep at it. You have to be persistent, but you also have to be patient because, like I said, here in the Pittsburgh area, there are few positions that come open. I know when I applied for this job, there was this open position and there was one other open position that I saw the posting for, and that was 2.5 years ago. I haven't seen any openings that have been posted on job boards since then.
Mm-hmm.
So, if your goal is to be in-house, I can't stress enough to know your market and know, what firms use nurses. Maybe send your resume in just in case somebody leaves. But it's very difficult. I think it's as difficult as potentially starting your own business and trying to build up your clientele in that manner, because again, you have to know the market. What attorneys use nurses? What attorneys might consider it? What attorneys aren't going to use nurses at all?
Mm-hmm. If our listeners wanted to get in touch with you, what would be the best way to do that?
The best way would be email, of course, in this electronic world. My email address is mchoma0816@yahoo.com.
And this has been Melissa Coma talking about being an in-house legal nurse consultant for a defense firm, identifying some of the challenges, the interesting aspects of this practice that she sees working in a law firm. Thank you for listening to this episode of Legal Nurse Podcast. I would like to encourage you to tune in again next week. We've got interviews every week with people talking about the factors that go into legal nurse consulting and how to increase your success. And Melissa, thank you so much for joining me on this program. I so much enjoyed hearing what you had to say today.
Well, thank you for asking me, Pat. It's been a wonderful experience.
Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.